Okay, so we're going to be starting Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11. Everyone has it? Chapter 11. I don't know if we'll do the whole thing inside, but we'll try and cover the chapter. Just a quick review. So last week we learned about the tzaddik. And we learned the tzaddik is someone who doesn't have a struggle, different to the Beinoni, as we're going to... But there's two kinds of a tzaddik. The Alter Rebbe explained. There's a tzaddik v'toivloi tzaddik. Sorry, tzaddik v'raloi tzaddik v'toivloi. So there's a tzaddik who has mastered the nefesh habamis. It doesn't pose any threat, but there's like a trace still of klipa because it's not completely transformed. The proof was that he doesn't have yet that kind of tzaddik. Although it's a tzaddik. And again, we're talking about the true meaning of a tzaddik here, not the borrowed term, but the, right? But it's there's still a trace of the klipa. However, it's v'ra loy. It's totally subservient. It was totally what we called bottle. So he gave the example of something treif that falls into something kosher, and there's so much kosher there that the treif thing becomes nullified, becomes bottle. So it's as if it's not there, although it is there, but it just doesn't really appear. So, but it still exists. Whereas the tzaddik of a toivloi, the tzaddik and a complete tzaddik, the tzaddik gomer, the perfect tzaddik, is someone that has completely transformed the nefesh habamis, has an unbelievable intolerance for anything that's not godly, and serves Hashem, which is just being, everything is just part of serving Hashem. And then also he gave another definition at the end of tzaddik, of a tzaddik gomer, a perfect tzaddik, that a tzaddik also someone that has no self-interest whatsoever, even if it's a very godly and spiritual self-interest. So a tzaddik v'toivloi, a tzaddik gomer, a perfect tzaddik is someone that serves Hashem, not even for the reward of getting olam haba, the world to come, right? It doesn't even come to the question. He's just here to be Hashem's servant and to serve Hashem, whatever Hashem wants him to do, and he's one, becomes like one with Hashem, like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and so on and so forth. Okay. In this perek, he's going to define a Rasha, meaning the Tanya type Rasha, right? Not the normal used term Rasha. And then what he's going to do is he's going to go into the Madreg of the Beinoni. So from Perek Yud Beis, from chapter 12 onwards, that's when we start the whole journey of the Beinoni, defining exactly what the Beinoni is, how the Beinoni works, and how to put ourselves on the path of a Beinoni, meaning, I use those words carefully, not how to become one, because I'm not sure if most of us are going to become one, but we talk about even the Beinoni, forget about the tzaddik, but that's not really the point of Tanya. The point of Tanya really is that we should pursue the Beinoni. In other words, it's an aspirational goal, like we always say, it's somewhat, that's the journey that we set ourselves on, and that's the mindset that we try to master. Now, we said yes last week that we still learn about a tzaddik because it's important to know what each thing is, what the definition is. And also, as I said last week, the reason that we learned about the tzaddik is because the tzaddik has some relevance. Don't forget, before we're born, as it says in the very beginning of Tanya, there's an oath that the neshama takes, tzihi tzaddik, you'll be a tzaddik. And not to be a rasha, right? Which means that every neshama takes that oath. So there's something about every neshama being a tzaddik, even though we're not going to be a tzaddik. And we explain because what that means is that we have the mindset, we understand that godliness, that God-centeredness about being a tzaddik, and we try and live our lives that even if we're not even a beinoni yet, but there can be certain moments in our life that we're so immersed in holiness, we're so immersed in kedusha, we're so immersed in good things that we even momentarily sometimes can be a tzaddik, which means we can have moments where there is no threat, there's no spiritual threat to us. Okay, that's something that's aspirational to try and experience once in a while. We suddenly have a disdain for anything worldly or materialistic stuff, or whatever the case is, which isn't our normal state of mind, but there can be moments like it, and that's all we learn about it. Which leads into this parak. This parak, we're going to learn about a Rasha. Now, why is it important to learn about a Rasha? Because I think there's a number of reasons that there's a number of aspects that are very relevant in terms of us understanding what a Rasha is, right? And even the two Madregas of a Rasha, as he's going to explain here. The first is because by us understanding, just like we're going to learn from next week onwards, we're going to learn about the aspiration of becoming a Beinoni, right? And we are going to make an effort, hopefully, to take one step in that direction, right? What also motivates that direction, at least to try and become a Beinoni, is understanding what a Rosh is. Because when we become something in Yiddishkeit, there's always two parts. There's what we're trying to become and what we're leaving behind, what we're running away from, right? So obviously, when we try to become a Beinoni, when we put ourselves on the path of a Beinoni, which is the subject of Tanya, it's the book of the Beinoni, the book of the struggle of the Beinoni, right? It's not only about engaging and embarking on that journey to become a Beinoni, it's about not being a Rasha, right? In other words, what motivates the step towards doing something good is the running away from something negative, right? So when we understand what a Rasha is, obviously we don't want to be one. So we see aspects of Rasha within ourselves, and therefore we try and not be that. Yeah?
Isn't that our natural state, Rasha?
Well, depends what you mean by natural state. So I want to explain something. So, yes. So what we're about to learn in Perikut Aleph is going to describe me for sure, and I'm assuming everyone else here in the room, right? Is that negative? No. Yeah, of course it's negative. We don't want to be a Rasha, right? But it's not. You see, this is the danger of. And that's why I always try and go slowly and clarify this. Like I've told you many, many, many times, the great Hasidim who was steeped in Tanya and tried to live their life with Tanya, they were very, very happy people. Even though, on the one hand, they were people that went to extra lengths not to delude themselves, right? No great Hasid learned Tanya, talked himself into it, that he's a tzaddik. Not even a Beinoni, most of them, right? They were very honest in themselves, they were very open in themselves. But it didn't cause unhappiness because it caused an awareness of something that's going on within us, which is the Nefesh HaBamis, and what Nefesh HaBamis tries to do. It caused a will to fight the Nefesh HaBamis, but not in a depressive, negative way, but just to get on top of it, right? And it did cause that sometimes, once in a while, there were moments that we learned later. In fact, those who learn the Daily Tanya will know this is the subject of Daily Tanya now about. But sometimes we do need to get serious, and sometimes we do need to set aside times to be more consciously fighting and to feel bad about the things we've done. But that's only certain times. Normally, most of the time, we have to understand that our core identity at the end of the day is our neshama, our nefesh, our kiss, our godly soul. Yes, the Rosh that he's going to describe is pretty much us, but it should induce even simcha, because the simcha is that although we are like that, Hashem keeps on giving us the opportunity to come closer to him and to do another mitzvah and to get on top of it and to do tshuva and so on and so forth, which is an amazing thing. Notwithstanding how low we are, nevertheless, we are the people that are serving Hashem, the bulk, the masses. This is why Hashem chose us guys that struggle with this, right? That's by design. And also, I think we need to understand what the word Rasha means. See, we're very used to the word Rasha as an evil person, right? The Rasha explains in Tanya, it's a Rasha, but it means that we entertain evil. What does evil mean also? Like evil. See, when people say Rasha, I mean, we're normally describing like such a wicked person, a terrible person, evil person. He's a murderer, he's a thief, he's a this, he's a that, right? That's not what it means necessarily. I mean, that could mean that too, but I'm saying it doesn't mean that. It means even someone who doesn't eat L'Shem Shemayim, right? So it means that we engage in things that are ungodly, which we all do, right? Unfortunately. And we engage in things that could distance us from Hashem, make us further from Hashem, which we all engage in. But Hashem always gives us that opportunity to do tshuva. That's why we have daily tshuva. Three times a day in Hashem, Esther, and Amidah, we do tshuva, right? We ask for and so on. So it has to be careful. Yes, the simple answer to your question is absolutely. It certainly defines us as a Russia, at least not the colloquial Russia, but the Tanya Russia. At least at the time that we're doing that very. So he says, particularly at the time that we're doing something wrong, we're engaging with ungodly stuff. So, yeah, it's a Russia. We can also do tshuva 10 minutes later. That's also true. Which means we're not a Russia for then, right? But so we are in and out of Russia for sure. But it's not a problem. I mean, it is a problem, but it shouldn't be a depressive thing. Chassidus is the last discipline that can be accused of inducing sadness, right? On the contrary, the whole concept of Chassidus is Tzav Hashem with joy. But still, to be honest, right? So they have to go together. You know, Yiddishkeit in general and the way things are taught in Tanya and Chassidus specifically requires an amazing amount of nuanced understanding and nuanced thinking, where many things can be true at the same time. Right? Are we a Rasha? Yes, in practice. Is our true identity our Nefesh Elokis? Absolutely. Do we feel that always? No. Does that mean we can't come close to Hashem? Absolutely not, on the contrary. When we overcome a struggle. In fact, in today's Tanya, it says that every time we overcome one struggle, even, it's an amazing, amazing breakthrough, right? All these things are true at the same time. It's not a problem. And in fact, later on he brings a Zohar, where he says that actually we can, even on a practice, we can have two feelings at the same time. We can be very upset with an Nefesh HaBa'amis and sometimes even come to tears by doing tshuva and asking Hashem to forgive us. At the same time, be amazingly happy because our true identity is a Nefesh HaLakis, and we're able to express that and do another mitzvah and learn some Torah. That's a long answer to your short question. Okay. Okay. Now, he says like this. V'zelu umazeh. He says, just like we explained before, that there's two levels of a tzaddik, which we call a perfect tzaddik and an imperfect tzaddik, or an imperfect tzaddik and a perfect tzaddik. You have the same thing. You have two levels of a rasha. Rasha of a toivloi, which is they call the opposite. There's Tanya's over there. Okay, no problem. Rasha of a toivloi. There's a rasha and it's good for him, meaning an imperfect rasha, which means a rasha that has some good, basically, right? Opposite of a, The umas, which corresponds to the tzaddik v'raloi, the tzaddik who has a little bit of bad, as we learned last week. What does that mean? So that's the first level of a rasha, not a perfect rasha. The hainu means like this. Now again, I want to give a little bit of introduction here also, that in the beginning of Tanya, the rasha actually is normally to do with the behavior, although not the way it's explained here. Meaning, the beginning of Tanya says that where he proves that a Beinoni cannot be half mitzvahs and half averus, because he brought many sources to prove that it can't be that way, because if a person has half transgression, that's not a Beinoni, because we know from the Gemara in many places that a person, when they're doing something wrong at that moment, they're a Rasha. They're engaged with evil, right? So that teaches us that Rasha has more to do with behavior, but here he seems to be saying it's more of a person's mindset. In other words, it's about the identity of the person. And the reason he's saying that is because when a person does something wrong, it means it's an indication, it expresses where he's at. The fact that we could do avera is not just about the action. The fact that we could do avera means that we don't have full control. A nefesh lekis doesn't have full control. And a nefesh lekis is weakened. Right? And then itself needs to be understood, because he says weakened later. What does it mean weakened? A nefesh lekis is intrinsically never weakened. It always remains intact, but it means it's more covered up, it's more concealed. It's less expressive, it's less able to be expressed. Like the lashon, the terminology that's used, the nefesh lekis is in golus, it's in exile. In a nefesh avamis, right? Okay. So, what is this imperfect rasha? That has a little bit of bad, a little bit of good, I mean. Hainu shatoiv shebenafshe means a person that the good within his soul, holekis shebemoicha, that's in his brain, ubechola yimoni, and he's left in the right ventricle of his heart, shebeliba in his heart, kofuf ubotl gabe harame aklipa, is subjugated somewhat, it is controlled by, it's there, the good is there, it's shining, but it's controlled somewhat by the klipa, the unholiness, shebechola lasmoli, on the left side, okay? Now, although he makes it sound like the imperfect Rasha corresponds to the imperfect Rasha has got a bit of good, kind of corresponds to the imperfect tzaddik that has a little bit of bad, as we said last week. It's not quite like that. The imperfect tzaddik that has a little bit of trace of bad, that bad has no expression whatsoever. It's like I said, like we said in the beginning today. We remind ourselves what we said last week. It's like that trait that is completely bottled in the good. It exists, so therefore subtly it means it doesn't have a complete intolerance of unholiness, but it really doesn't have any means of expression because it's over the struggle. When we talk about an imperfect Russia, which means that the good, a little bit of good is still there, the good works. It's not bottled. It's controlled a bit, but the fact that we can do our various means, at the end of the day, our Nefesh HaBamis has a bit of control, so our Nefesh HaKis is not fully in control, therefore it's subjugated somewhat to the Nefesh HaBamis, right? But the good that we have expresses itself, and we do good things because of that. So it's a bit different, you know what I'm saying? It shouldn't get mixed up. Okay. Now he says, V'zeh mischalei gam kein l'revovus madregus chalukos. V'inyin kamus v'eichas habitl v'kfifas hatoiv l'rachas v'shalom. This concept that a person is a Rasha but nevertheless has some good, and that just that good is a little bit doesn't have full control and is subjugated somewhat to the bad, this spreads out into hundreds of different levels, right? It can be of how much it's dependent on the bad, how much it's controlled by the bad, and he's going to give a few different examples here. Yesh mi, this is the best case scenario. Yesh mi shakfifo vehabitel etzle ma'at mizeir. There are Rishoyim. Again, I've explained now the use of the word Rishoyim, right? There are Rishoyim that the good the control that the bad has over the good is only a little, right? Afkam zois ein bitzmidis, not even constant. V'loy todir, it's not regular. The prokim krovim, it's not very frequent at all. Ella, it's a person that le'itim rechoikim misgaber hara alatov. It's a person that really always does only good things. He always serves Hashem properly. He always never gives in to his yetzara in the Shabbos. Once in a while he does. Right? Once in a while he gives in. And if once in a while that bad sort of overpowers the good, v'koivish as the irktan and conquers the small city which is the body, hu aguf, and that's the body. Achloi kuloi, but not all of it. Alamiktsasa, just a little bit. Levachi esol mashmatesh. Listen to him. Anaslem akov. Only a part of him becomes like a wagon, a chariot to the nefesh habamis. Ulevushli slabish boy echad mishloish levushel. Only one of the garments of the nefesh habamis like takes over either thought or either speech or action, right? The Hainu, for example, he's painting a pretty good guy now, right?
You should aspire to be this.
Yeah, absolutely. The Hainu, oyber meisa levad, which means, okay, once in a while, there's an action that's not so good. For example, lasos averus kalas, he does like a lenient avera. Okay, you know, he does like, I don't know, let's say, he spoke in the middle of davening or something, I don't know, right? But loy chamura is not any strict ones, chas v'shalom. Oh, but Dibur Levad, once in a while he stumbles in something to do with speech. For example, he gives an example. Ledabik Avak Lashon Hara. He speaks what's called Avak Lashon Hara. There's a thing called Lashon Hara, that's forbidden, but then there's something called Avak Lashon Hara, which is not, it's like a rabbinic prohibition. It's like when you allude to something bad. It's not really bad. You make a comment that could be to interpret it that you're not being so complimentary about the other person, right? That's so this Russia, once in a while, he speaks a bit of Avak Lashon Hara. All the son is, or he scoffs, or he's a governor. Oyba Machshava Levad, also a person that just once in a while, he entertains a negative thought, right? Hirure Avera, thoughts of Avera, he doesn't actually do them, but he's thinking about Avera, which he makes the comment, Hakoshim Avera, which can be even worse than Avera itself, right? It's interesting, he brings a... In some of the commentaries, it brings an interesting thing. I'll just share with you. The Maharal talks about it in other places that actually, as soon as like this, right? So when you, let's say you think about doing an avera, or you have avera thoughts, right? So. Sometimes the avera thoughts themselves are... But now, by the way, again, when we talk about avera thoughts, we're never talking about the initial thought. A benini has no control about initial thoughts, which means everyone, except for a few tzaddikim, have no control to have initial negative thoughts, right? It can be thoughts of jealousy, it can be thoughts of promiscuity, it can be thoughts of anger, whatever the case is. Most human beings never have control if those thoughts will enter their mind. What we have control over, which is the benini, is whether we take care of it or not, whether we, like it says in the daily Tanya that we're learning now, whether you make a conscious effort to push away the thoughts, right? So we talk about thoughts here, we're not talking about initial thoughts, we're talking about harboring the thoughts, right? So harboring the thoughts sometimes can be an avera themselves. For example, if someone harbors, thoughts of promiscuity and these type of things, That actually is a prohibition in the Torah. It says, we say in the Shema, you shouldn't pursue your, you shouldn't go after your heart, you shouldn't go after your eyes, and so on and so forth. But other things can also be, for example, a person entertains or harbors thoughts of jealousy. According to the Rambam, jealousy is one of the Ten Commandments. Even if you have in your mind, even if you, or thoughts of revenge, or thoughts of hate, these things can all be actual prohibitions. Now, although on one level, they never appear to be as bad as the action itself. On the other hand, in Kabbalah and the Maharal also explains that man, actually they were sometimes. Because what happens is, the thought is more connected with the person. Each one, we have three means of expressions, and we call it the beginning of Tanya, the three levushim, the three garments. Right? Garments means the way we express ourselves. So we express ourselves in thought, speech, and action. Of those three, thought is the most united with the person. Like we never stop thinking, right? Although it's only a garment, but it's a very attached garment to us. It's almost us, right? Hard to separate between us and the garment. When I do something that's wrong, okay, besides if I have a bad effect on someone else, but if I do something that's wrong, I did something, it's an action. I didn't affect me so much. I did something that was wrong, right? So you can separate the me from the person. It doesn't affect me spiritually as bad maybe as a thought. A thought actually affects me worse in a way. Because a thought means, it's like, you know, the mashal, the analogy that's given, this is like a turtle. It says, Kardain come to the wishim in Ayubay. The turtle also has a garment, it's the shell, right? But you can't really separate between the turtle and the shell. On the one hand, it's just a shell, it's a garment. Now then, it's part of the turtle, isn't that right? That's how we explain machshav, that's how we explain thought. And therefore, it's a very, very attached to us, and therefore, when we entertain toxic thoughts, in a way, it's worse. And the way it's better, in a way, it's worse, right? So he says that a person who thinks bad things once in a while, so that kind of thing. Now, this is the highest level of an imperfect Rasha, right? In other words, he's a pretty good guy. He's a Rasha. So the truth is, why do we call him a Rasha? Let's say he's a once a year Rasha, or twice a year Rasha. So there was a mashpia, I saw this on this very interesting thing. There was a great mashpia, a great Hasidic mentor in Kfar Chabad. His name was Shlomo Chaim Kesselman. My father-in-law learned by him for many years. He used to always quote him. But I saw something in his name, and he said like this. He said, again, the Rasha of Tanya means someone who connects with ungodly things, right? So the person who is a Rasha of a Tovla has got a lot of good. But not only has a lot of good, he has mainly good. In other words, this is a guy that really does only mitzvahs, he only says Hashem most of the time. That's 95% of the time. Once in a while, he speaks a little davening, or avak lashon hara, or a little action, right? Or a little thought, whatever, right? And nevertheless, he's still in the category of the Rasha. Why? So Shlomo Chaim Kesselman gave an interesting analogy. He said like this. Let's say someone owns a clock, right? Someone owns a clock. It's always on time. But it's a phenomenon with this clock that a couple of times a year, it's not the right time. And then it goes back, and so, right? I mean, in physically, such a muscle is not possible because you'd have to manually put a battery there. But let's say this is what happens, right? So can you say like this, this is a reliable clock because, you know, a person can always look at the time all the time? The answer is not a reliable clock. Because any time you look at it, it could be the time that it's not working properly, right? So in other words, that's why such a person, even though he's, like you said, we should really aspire to be such a person, right? But you still can't call it a bainani. The fact is that the person has an intrinsic attachment, not only the few times he does something wrong, but he always has it. He always has a connection to unholy things. The proof is that once in a while, he actually exercises that. He implements that. So that's why it's in a different category, even though it's a higher level within that category, but it's a category of holy around like that, because he's a person whose clock goes wrong sometimes. But he's a person that clock goes wrong even when the clock isn't wrong. In other words, the clock that goes wrong is a clock that sometimes goes wrong. It's a different kind of clock. You can't look at a clock and say, oh, what a wonderful clock. No, you can't. It's not a wonderful clock because it's a clock that sometimes goes wrong. Follow? That's what's in that category. Okay. So he says, for example, what do you say? Yeah, oy machshava levar, only in thought. Hirurah veira kashima veira v'gam eino maharba veira lasoiso. I'll explain in a second. Says, even if it's not going to, the thought is not going to become something, he's not going to do anything about it, just thinking about it, detaining it. He gives the example of promiscuity, for example, he's just detaining it, but it's still not very, it's still something that's not good. Or, for example, it can be a Russia that she shasa koish lasma Torah, that he learns Torah, but sometimes there's a few minutes that he can learn, and he wastes time. Person that sometimes wastes time. Because it's none but others, Haner Balaila Khululak. We learned to break others, that someone who wastes, who's up at night, Mufana Libo, he just distracts himself.
Okay,
so again, someone, all these things, right? She says, Shabbat achas we call Eila any one of these things. Nikra Rasha Basi. At that time it's called the Rasha. Sharasha Benafshoi Goiver Boy Umislabish Begufoi. Because at that time he's involved in unholy things, in holy impurity, umatamay, and he's impurifying his soul because the Nefesh Abam is the animalistic part of him, is in control at that moment. And therefore he's an unreliable clock. Now, it's true, he says, V'achakach goyver boyatoiv, afterwards the good repowers itself, Shabanafsha lakis in his nefesh lakis, so mischaret and he regrets. Umevakish mechila v'slicha, and he asks forgiveness from Hashem, v'Hashem yislach loy im shav b'tshuva hara'uyal pi'atzas chachomeinu zal. If he does tshuva properly, like Chazal tell us to do tshuva b'shloish l'cholik v'kapora, in the three levels of kapora, in the 3 levels of atonement, Shehoi Rabbi Shmuel Doirish Kamesh Kosim Achad, Rabbi Shmuel used to talk about, and we learned in Masechta Yom. Okay, so that's one type of Rasha. Now he gives another type of Rasha, which is an imperfect Rasha, a bit worse. He says, what? Yesh mi shara goyv ba yoyser. It's like 2/3 down the page now, by the dot. Yesh mi shara goyv ba yoyser. That's those people that know the bad is stronger. Umislabish boy b'chol shloish shalavushim shalara. And it goes into all 3 garments. Umachtia baveris kamuris, and a person does sometimes more severe averis. Ubeitim kravim yoisim, more frequently. However, it's a person that doesn't want to do averis, just falls into temptation all the time. Ach ben tayim mischaret uboim lo hirureit shuva. But in the meantime, he always regrets it. Mivchenes hatoiv shebenafsha, and the regret comes from the good side, right? Shemigabik tzas ben tayim, like he goes back and forth. This is like more like... more like the rest of us, right? It's that we give in and then we, I shouldn't have done that. Then we do tshuva. We go back and forth, right? So the good's still operating. That's the bottom line, right? We're not a complete Russia. Definitely a Russia of a toivloi, because the good is still operating. It just goes back and forth. It gets powerful and it goes back weak and it goes powerful and it goes back all the time. Ela she'ein lo yisgabrus kol kach, just not strong enough lenatzeach ezera, to be victorious over the bad, lifresh mechatoiv legamri, not to do bad things, liyos moidav oizolei, right? And he says about this guy, ve'azer amru razal, on this chazal telling, say, reshoim meleim charotis, that's an expression in the Gemara, wicked people are full of regrets, they're always regretting, right? He says, shayim roiv reshoim, this is actually a reference to most reshoim, jesh mechanez toiv nashmadayim, because they still have good, they still have some good, right? Now, obviously, in this, there can be many, many levels. It could be, right, how frequent this is and how frequent it is. I tell a story about Richard the Masmid. Richard the Masmid, I don't know if I ever described it to him. He was an amazing chassid. Just to give you a level how these things can be. Like, we read this and we think, oh, that's us, right, you know. We try to do good, we want to do good, we want to keep the mitzvahs and all that, but you know, every so often we give in to our nefesh habamis, right? And then we regret it, we do tshuva, I mean, that's what we daven. I mean, Hashem gives us an opportunity to do tshuva, it's not like a bad thing. Every day we do tshuva, as I said before. But then there were some people who take that much more subtly, much more seriously. So there was a chassid called Richard the Masmid. I'll just describe to you who he was. Richard the Masmid was a Jew that mamash a whole day, a whole night, he was just serving Hashem. He was, He used to daven for hours a day, hardly ate. He was very meticulous in mitzvahs. There's many, many, many stories about him, right? And he was actually considered a Benyamin. He was one of the few Hasidim that was either the Friedrich Rebbe said about him as a Benyamin, or the Hasidim just considered him a Benyamin. He was like, right. He wasn't considered a Tzaddik Gomer or a Tzaddik She'ena Gomer, meaning he still had the struggle, he was a regular person, but he never gave in to the struggle. He was a complete Benyamin, right? But he didn't think he was a Benyamin. When he would teach Tanya, he would come to this part and he would say that the Alter Rebbe would describe this Russia that's, he's full of regrets because he always, you know, he does bad, he does Aveira, then he comes back and he regrets it, and then back and forth. He would start crying. Why would he start crying? Because he would say that he, if that's the case, he's not even such a Russia. Right? No, sorry. One second, this makes sense. One second. Oh, no, sorry. The story is the next part. When he talks about the complete Russia, he never regrets. So when he learned that, he would start crying. He's worse than a complete Russia. Why? Because he says, I never ever regret anything. I never regret anything, so therefore I just stay the way I am. And he felt that he wasn't growing properly, right? I mean, he never did Navera, but he was, yeah. So the Chassidim said to him, what are you talking about? Like, you don't, but the Rosh of Aralai, what do you mean you're worse than a Rosh of Aralai? The Rosh of Aralai also doesn't regret, so you can't be worse. Even if you want to be humble like that, you have to be at least a complete Rosh. You can't be worse than a complete Rosh. So he said, no. He said, what do you mean? The Russia Veraloi that Alter Rebbe talks about next, the complete Russia, he said he never learned Chassidus, he never learned Torah, so therefore, yeah, obviously he's like that. He says, but I learned and I'm still like that, so therefore that's even worse. I'm just telling the story because what I said before in the beginning, that the elder Chassidim never had any delusions about themselves. On the contrary, they were always very, very hard on themselves, and yet there was no depression. They were very happy people. He was a very, very happy Yid, the Rosh of the Masvid. Because they had purpose, that's right, because it wasn't, in other words, no, because there's a big different confusion nowadays that people think, there's this whole thing about not judging yourself and loving yourself and accepting yourself and all this nonsense, right? Why? Because, yeah, we have to accept our true self, which is our neshama, that's true. That's the real acceptance that we understand, that we always have intrinsic holiness because we have a neshama, nefesh v'kis. We can learn about this in a second, which is another reason we learn about the Russia, but we don't have to be perfect. We're not perfect. We're not enough. We're not perfect. We're very deficient. And it's fine. It doesn't mean we're bad people. It doesn't mean we can't be happy. It doesn't mean we can't serve Hashem. It doesn't mean we can't have purpose. It doesn't mean any of that, right? We don't have to be perfect. That's why people today, I don't want to be judged. I don't want to feel judged. I don't want this, I don't want that. Why? Because I need to be perfect. Why do you need to be perfect? You're not perfect. By virtue of being a human being, you're not perfect. Now, we shouldn't judge other people. That's a separate story because that's not for us. But we can be hard on ourselves a little bit. Now, obviously, we mustn't be too hard on ourselves because we have to be besimcha. So later on, there's chapters and chapters dealing with this, how you balance those two things out. But on the one hand, we have to push ourselves. Of course, we have to push ourselves. The greater chassidim, the greater they were, the more they pushed themselves. And the more they understood about the infinite greatness of Hashem, the more they realized that they haven't even scratched the surface. It came from a greatness, not from a weakness. Understand? It came from the greater they were, the greater they realized, I've got so much more to do. That's why you have people like Bichon HaMasvid who said, I'm not even a Rosh HaVeralai, I'm nothing. That didn't bring despair, it doesn't bring giving up. On the contrary, made him push himself more, you know what I'm saying, to serve Hashem more. Follow me? Okay, I just want to bring that out a little bit. Okay. It says like this. Now, it says, we are now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom. So Abba Adonai explained the imperfect Rosh HaVeralai, you still got good. Either the good comes up a lot of the time, or he's there most of the time, or it comes up with regrets a lot of the time because he's doing a lot of not good things, whatever the case is. Now, we're going to learn the next few lines is going to define a proper Russia, like a complete Russia, right? In the beginning of this parak, I explained what the purpose for us, what the relevance for us is to learn about a Russia. I explained one idea. The one idea was because in our pursuit to become a Benyan, we need to know what we're trying to leave. Trying to leave being state of Russia, so we understand that any connection we have to bad subtly means we're Russia, therefore we try harder to pursue the path of the Benyamin. But there's something else about learning what a Rashi is, and that's something very powerful that comes up in the next few lines. It's like this. But someone who never ever regrets, he just does averis. Has no thoughts of tshuva. He's not interested at all. That means his neshama is really buried. His neshama doesn't express itself at all. Nikra Rasha v'raloi. He's called the Rasha and the complete Rasha, right? Which means sheharasha benafshoi hu levadoi nishu b'kirboi. What's left in him? Only the bad. Consciously, at least, only the nefesh amamis. Ki govar kol kach alatoiv, because it's overpowered the good so much. Achen istalig bekirboy, it seems to have departed from him. In imperfect Russia, we learned before, the good is still there. Therefore, pops up its head all the time, more frequently, less frequently, but it's still operating, it's still pulsing, right? But the Russia of a raloi, the ra, the bad, the evil has become so strong, empowering, overpowering the good, that the good seems to have disappeared, right? So far. Then he adds something amazing, which is so different to the tzaddik gomor. The tzaddik gomor, the perfect tzaddik meant that the good overpowered the bad so bad, so well, so strongly, that the bad disappeared, or was even better, was transformed completely. Completely eliminated. Transformed even better. It doesn't work with a rush like it, even a proper rush. Proper Russia, it seems to be similar. It seems to be that the good has just gone away, right?
No,
because you've got to feed some good. Oh, so he says, what's pshat? He says, but v'oymeid b'pchinas makif olov. But it's still there. It's there in a way of makif. When we say that the good seems to have disappeared, we mean consciously. But it doesn't mean it's not there. We have this concept called makif and primi. Primi means it's internalized, it's conscious, you feel it, right? So by the imperfect Rasha, you feel it. Sometimes not so much. There are shame that you only feel it once a year. Once in five, whatever the case is, right? The Rasha Varaloi seems never to feel it, right? There were even like in history, you know, this famous story about, I think the Bashemta, not the Bashemta, one of the great tzaddikim came to a town. He landed in a town for Yom Kippur and there was no minyan. And they asked him, is there no yid there somewhere, right? So he said, yeah, there's one yid, but he's the Peretz, the squire of the town, but he's a complete Russia, he's an anti-Semite. He persecutes the Jews. He was born a Jew, he's a halachic Jew, but he's not. So he said, go and call him. Right? So before we get to what happened when he went to call him, which will be explained by the next line, but they said, are you mad? This is like dangerous. He says, no, go and tell him that I want to see him. And he came to shul. And the story was that he went to the Aron Kodesh and he stood at the Holy Yom Kippur and he did tshuva. When they said Shema Yisrael, he passed away. Passed away at Bal Tshuva. Passed away at Tzaddik. Right? And he made a dominion. Now, before he came to Shul Yom Kippur, he was a Rosh HaVaralek, let's say. Exactly what he was. That he was never interested in anything. He was against Yidden, he was against Torah, against mitzvahs. He never ever had any regrets. So how did he come to shul? Because even by the Rosh HaVaralek, there's the Pintal Yid is still there. It's not bipnimi, it's not internalized, it's not conscious, it's not felt. But it's there. It's there in a way of makif, it's hovering. It's like the imagery we think about is hovering out on top. Like it's connected, but it's not internalized. Yeah? And he says, V'lochein, listen to what he says now, V'lochein, because it fits into the minion story. V'lochein Amru Razal. And that's where Chazal say, that kol be'asoro shchinta sharia. That when you have 10 yidin together in one room, there's a presence of Shekhinah there. And it's an amazing thing. He just brings it in this context. Why? He's saying we have 10 yidin. Doesn't matter who the yidin were. Doesn't say 10 tzaddikim. Doesn't say 10 beinanim. Doesn't even say 10 imperfect rishonim. Right? It says we have 10 yidin. There's an automatic presence of the Shekhinah. It fits nicely with that story because the guy came to Kol Nidre. There was already a minion. He hadn't done tshuva yet. He took a Holy Yom Kippur to the tshuva. But there was a minion, it was fine. For the guy, it was fine. Yeah? For the tzaddik, it was fine. That was a minion. The minion was there. Right? As they say, 9 Moshe Rabbeinus can't make up a minion. 10 Rishoyim could. Why? That's how different it is to the Rosh of a Rabbi. In other words, so that's the word. Now, that's the amazing thing about this, right? And maybe that's why another reason why the Alter Rebbe goes through this parak in explaining to us what a Rasha is, even a Rasha Gomor. Okay, Richard Amas, we thought he wasn't even a proper Russia, but let's say on a practical purpose, we'd like to think that we're not perfect. We're not complete Rishayim, okay? We're at least fit into the category that we regret sometimes, yeah? We do tshuva sometimes. But it doesn't matter. There's always a reconnection point. In other words, before we get into the next perek, the fellow says we have to be a Beinoni. There's a great danger. Someone who's very, very far from a Beinoni can always think, well, but Al Treba redefined Beinoni, and he tells us that we should pursue that path. I don't think it's for me. I'm far too gone for that. Says Al Treba, you might be far too gone. In fact, you might be really far gone. You might even be a Russia gummer, a complete Russia. But you still have that neshama. That neshama is still there with the Derech Makif. No, that's it.
So complete evil, I know what I'm thinking of, but is this more evil?
So there is very, very few cases where we learn that the good became so buried that it's so trapped that tshuva is not a possibility. But even then, there's some redemption. I'll give you an example of that. So you're thinking of Hitler, obviously, but there's other precedents in history. She actually manifests itself even with that in a way. Not with him specifically, but so we learn, for example, there is certain people that are completely bad, like a Molech. A Molech is complete evil. That's what Torah said, you have to destroy a Molech, right? Haman was a Molech coming up to Purim, right? Haman is a Molech. Could Haman be, so it's explained differently in different places, but Haman, I mean, first he wasn't even Jewish, but I'm saying Haman, even though everything has some good in it, right? But Haman at the time, for all intents and purposes, could not be redeemed. He had to be destroyed. A Molech has to be destroyed. Yet the Gemara says that Bibnei Bonov Shel Haman Lomdu Torah Bibnei Brak, that some of the descendants of Haman became Jewish and learned Torah in Bnei Brak. Right? Why? Because sometimes after many generations, there can be a redemption of that spark. Right? So there is such. So for the most part, we say it doesn't matter how far gone a person is. Al Tareb was not talking about the Hitlers of the world. He's talking about the regular Yidden, even a Russia, even that guy in the Paritz, even that anti-Semite in the shtetl. He's got a neshama. There's redemption. It might need a power of a tzaddik on Yom Kippur to pull him there, whatever. Right? There's many stories about Shem Tov like that, and so on and so forth, right? But the neshama is alive, right? The neshama is alive. You see now, by the way, today no one's reshoim chas shalom anyway, because at least that's how we have to look at other people, because most people today are what we call the captured child. You know what I'm talking about? So there's a thing in halacha, because really what Al Treb is talking about, and that's maybe why Richard Amaski was crying, because sometimes the more you know, the more you can apply this to yourself, right? But there is certain halachas that apply to real Rishayim, like halachic Rishayim, right? Today we don't apply those halachas, because today we say that people who don't keep mitzvahs, or even do averis, is because they don't know. It's like the Gemara has a classification of a person that was grown up, that grew up. It's called a tinok shanishba labeinu akum, a child that was captured among the non-Jews, right? Among the idol worshippers. Doesn't know anything, right? For example, the Gemara talks about in the laws of Shabbos. Such a person is not even called, he's not called a person that desecrates the Shabbos. Now, that doesn't mean he's not losing out. It is, because we believe every mitzvah is a beautiful thing. That's why it's our job to go and get those yidden and to bring them closer, right? We could say, let's just leave them be, and they'll be out of trouble. They won't get into trouble because they didn't know better. But that's not doing them any favor. It's a favor for a year to become close, right? To become close to Hashem, of course. So that's why we need, and it'll give them purpose, give them more meaning, and so on. But in terms of the legalities of it, they're not. But I'm just saying, so you have Yidden today, I don't want to call them Rishonim, because they're not Rishonim, Chas Hashem, because they don't know better. But look at what's happening in Israel. I mean, you have Yidden, Mamish Sekulak to the nth degree, right? With the neshama is working overtime. Like you see them reconnecting, you see them davening, you see putting on tzitzis. It's the most amazing thing, right? Because now, you can have, as I said, to answer your question, you can have, once in a while, you can have a person that's so evil and has done so much evil that the good is still there in a makif way, but it's like irretrievable, but until a process. And that would be like the Hitlers of the world and that kind of thing, right? Like the Haman, Hitler, that kind of thing. So yeah, correct, but even people without a nefesh like there's still some spark of good, most people, most human beings, right? Yeah.
Yes, but redemption is different.
Redemption is different, but I'm saying some people don't have redemption because they've gone so far that they've like foregone their redemption, right? Mm-hmm. Even the Rambam says that there's certain averus, like tshuva is always an option. You can always return to Hashem because we always have a nefesh elokis. Talking about Yidden, right? We always have a nefesh elokis. So we can always. But there's certain things that a person does. If he does them on purpose, intentionally, then one of the punishments can be that Hashem makes it hard to do tshuva. I mean, tshuva is always an option, but it becomes more difficult. It's part of the punishment. In other words, Hashem says, "You want to rebel like that? I'll make it hard. I'll make myself hard to get." Kind of thing, right? But that's part of the process, but it doesn't mean you can't do it. You could, right? The Gemara tells a famous story about Acher. That was one of the great sages who became a heretic, right? Which, when a great sage becomes a heretic, is even worse, right? So it means he's like a tucker. He was tucker Russia in a way. And he had a student called Remeir. And Remeir told him once, Chazor b'cho, do tshuva. He told his teacher, do tshuva. He said, I can't, because I once heard a heavenly voice that Hashem called out, and he said, Shuvu shbonim shevavim, return my naughty children, chutz ma'acher, except for Acher. Acher can't return. So I've been thrown out, but I can't do tshuva. And the Gemara says that Remeir continues to argue with him, and he said, no, you have to do tshuva. Well, why is Remeir arguing with him? If you heard a heavenly voice, you heard a heavenly voice. Because sometimes it is the heavenly voice, sometimes a person can do a lot of bad, to the point where Hashem said, I don't want your tshuva, and he can still do tshuva. Because that last part, that even the Rosh HaGomer, again, except with the exception of a few people, but even the Rosh HaGomer has that makif, has that neshama that can always bring about tshuva.
Maybe he doesn't see every single one of us. But you can see, if
you're
tweaking...
Yeah,
100%.
So it's important that people remember, I
mean, sure.
Of course. That's...
Every single person.
Right. That's the message. We have to... Yeah. That's why every year is special, yeah. There was a chassid, his name was Moshe Vyshetsky. So he was a chassid that came from Russia. When the first chassid came from Russia, like in my father's time, when he came from Riga, they moved to Tel Aviv. So there was a little area in Tel Aviv called Nachlat Binyamin. It's still around. It's not a very Hasidic area now, but it used to be. When my father grew up, it was a real Hasidic. All Hasidim came there. And this Hasid was once Fabrengi. He was in a Fabrengi. And he said, once he was Fabrengi, he took a little bit of Mashke and he said, L'chaim. And he said, you cannot, he was a real Hasidic Jew. And he said, you cannot imagine the pleasure, the beauty of taking a bus ride in Tel Aviv. So all the guys looked at him, he's gone crazy, he must be drunk or something. Like, well, what's he saying? Everyone knew at that time, except for the Nachlat Binyamin. Tel Aviv, until today, I mean, it's changed a bit now. There's more Yiddishkeit happening in Tel Aviv these days. But Tel Aviv is like the second part of Israel, right? This guy's saying, he goes on a bus in Tel Aviv, and I can tell you the bus in Tel Aviv, when he went on the bus, wasn't exactly full of Jews that learned Tanya or kept Shabbos, or, right? And he said, you cannot imagine the tiny little pleasure that Hashem has, and I have, he says, and the beauty of a bus ride in Tel Aviv. He asked him, what are you talking about? So he said, look what the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya. He says, at the end of Tanya, it says, 10 Yidden get together. It doesn't say which kind of Yidden. In fact, it says in the context of an unbelievable Russia. When 10 Yidden get together, the Shechinah is there, right? He said, we were back in Russia, 10 Yidden getting together at all was illegal. So hardly ever happened. So we didn't have that amazing thing of 10 Jews getting together. Unless once in a while we had a secret minion. He says, here in Tel Aviv, every bus ride is the Shechinah. Again, by the way, again, same thing. Nuanced thinking, right? It doesn't mean, I've said this many, many times, like, you know, that the Rebbe, when he was always demanding, he always pushed people more. Why? No, because when you see this on another yid, you don't judge. On the same time, you actually push them more towards Yiddishkeit. Because look who you really are. You're really a yid. You're really an neshama. You just have to reveal it more, that's all. Right? Next week, Mitzvah will start the real journey of Tanya, which is the 12th chapter, telling us about the Benyani, which really takes us till the end of the section of Tanya.
Thanks.
All right. You're welcome.